You're listening to the Better for America podcast, presented by AMAC, the Association of Mature American Citizens.
Hello, everybody. I'm Rebecca Weber, and this is your AMAC podcast, Better for America. I'm very happy today to have with me Bobby Charles. Bobby Charles is our AMAC spokesman, and Bobby Charles has worked in criminal justice and national security for over 30 years. He was Assistant Secretary of State under Colin Powell and worked in the Bush 41 and Reagan White Houses. Bobby, thanks for being back with me today. This is our Reb and Rob on Truth and History show. This is fun. How are you doing today, Bobby?
Doing great. The world keeps spinning, and I guess we just have to spin with it.
That's exactly right. You know, I love that we always talk about the truth, and we love to blend history into some of our stories and the time that we have together. One of the things that's been driving me crazy is hearing about what's happening with the Major League Baseball, right? And we heard that Manfred, he is the baseball commissioner. He made this decision to move the baseball game out of Georgia, the great state of Georgia, and move it over to Colorado. So I'm scratching my head thinking, well, why are they bringing politics into sports? I mean, people love baseball. It's an American sport, right? We love it. And, you know, there's so much division among people when it comes to politics. We don't want to go to a baseball game and have to think about that kind of stuff. Yeah. But the sad part about this whole thing to me are the lies that we're hearing. They're spinning the truth. And the damage that we see is going to come to Cobb County, Georgia, which is highly populated minorities really make up the greater population in this county. And I feel so saddened that they're going to be hit so hard. We're coming out of a pandemic. Many small businesses are gone forever. And many other businesses, small businesses, minority-owned businesses, were really looking forward to seeing how their business might get a little bit of an uptick because the game was going to be in town, only to hear that the game is being moved. So it hurts Georgian citizens, but it also makes not a lot of sense to me, because when I looked into it and said, well, what's so much better about moving it to another state if it's all around their voting laws? Can you explain a little bit what was Sure. behind this decision?
Yeah. So, you know, increasingly, Rebecca, and I think anybody watching national with the tolerance to keep watching national news is learning that the left is making, let's use a baseball analogy, unforced errors. And they're making more rapid unforced errors because they're desperate to get as much as they can drive through at both the federal and state levels, in a sense, vilifying and demonizing. And I think we just have to do a timeout here and say, so when we make good decisions in our private lives, in our public life, we expect our officials to base those decisions on facts and on law, not on emotion. And if you unpack what has happened here, it's sort of a classic example of unthinking or reflexive reaction based on sort of a national we can't say that anymore. Well, it's some sort of a national frenzy. Okay, so here's the reality. Georgia looked backwards, and it's very important to focus on facts. Georgia looked backwards, and they also looked forwards when, as 35 other states did, they looked at the 2020 election cycle. They looked at the H.R. 1-S1 bill that has been advanced in the House in Washington, and they said, look, we have constitutional prerogatives. We also have constitutional duties here in the state of Georgia. I'm not in Georgia, but this is what they were saying. And we need accountability in our election process. Now, let me just show you how basic this is. If you go back to the New York Times reporting in September of 2020, you will see that they were upset that the primaries were showing up double voting by thousands. It was showing up all kinds of problems. Now, they thought this was going to favor Republicans, not Democrats. Then you look at what happened in the general election, and you see, 20,000 absentee ballots without verification, without identity verification, coming in on November 5th in the wee hours of the morning. You see slowing down of ballot counting, actual suspension of ballot counting. And now you look forward and you see, what is this S1 HR1 doing? It's attempting to nationally eliminate eliminate identification, nationally eliminate forced mail-in voting, ballot harvesting, drop your ballot anywhere, anytime with any signature and it's good to go. Okay, so now let's stop and look at what the bill actually did in Georgia. It was very simple, and it's SB 202. I think you can go and look it up online. It's all about accountability. So what does it do? It says that absentee ballots have to be verified by some ID. Okay, now let's just take that one provision. They say,
that's fair.
Well, they say that's racist, right? So let me ask you, is it racist when you have to put an ID down when you go into the very baseball stadium we're talking about here? Is it racist when you have to put an ID down to take an SAT or an ACT? Is it racist when you have to put an ID down to get your unemployment benefits or your welfare benefits or your SNAP benefits? Is it racist when you put an ID down for buying something at a store which requires an age requirement? Of course not. Now, what is more important, Rebecca? Buying beer or voting? Okay. Some people might say buying beer, but let's say voting. Okay. Voting is the centerpiece of our electoral process. So what else does the bill do? It sets up an emergency hotline for illegal activities, which you can call in on. It says that this is the other big provision. It says that absentee ballots need to be dropped off during business hours. Now, why? Because they had so much double voting, because they had so many irregularities that they want to witness at the drop off. And they can, by the way, they expand voting to weekends. They say that, here's another provision in the bill. They say that voting should not be arrested, just stopped. You should count ballots from the minute you start to the when you're finished. Now, that was an irregularity that created questions. Even if you believe nothing bad happened,
right,
the effect of that psychologically was it caused people to question. So this entire bill, if you study it on the facts, has nothing racist in it. But this narrative that they've promoted is intended, in effect, to excuse anything that happened in the past, to make it seem that the Republican Party in Georgia, which is a party line vote on this bill, is somehow racist, which is ironic because the history of racism in the South is predominantly built around the Democratic Party. And then it's intended, honestly, Rebecca, it's intended, they're just saying, hey, these are constitutionally given state prerogatives. We don't want them taken away, so we are going to codify them. So what's wrong with that?
Yeah. In other words, Georgia did the right thing to say, hey, we want to try to make sure that the mistakes that occurred in the 2020 election don't occur again. So they took certain measures. And, you know, while we're waiting to see if S1, which is the companion bill to HR1, which is a terrible, terrible bill that strips states of the ability to check for voter ID and does all kinds of things that really, in my opinion, prevent American people from ever being able to vote another conservative president into office again. But here's the hypocrisy or the strangeness about the decision by this baseball commissioner, because the Georgia law provides for 17 days of in-person early voting, including two Sundays. Colorado law provides for 15 days, which do not include Sundays. So what exactly is the statement that Manfred thinks that he's making regarding voting rights and the president to get behind the decision and say, oh, yeah, you know, it's smoke and mirrors. I think they're trying to convince people that aren't paying close and careful attention to the details that H.R. 1, S.1 is good. And we're going to, you know, smack down the hands of any state that tries to do things that aren't in line with ultimately what S1 is going to do.
Well, and what you're pointing out, Rebecca, is sort of a larger phenomenon, if you will. There's this concentric circle, and at the center right now is this Georgia bill that everybody wants to talk about, which is, frankly, go study it. There's nothing racist in the bill. You step out one circle further and you have this corporate and personal self-censorship and a sense that everybody's woke and they need to respond. If somebody says jump, they say, okay, fine, and then jump higher. Okay, jump higher. So here's the problem. Major League Baseball, and you're absolutely right, sports was one of those areas. Unfortunately, the NFL fell off in this direction, but sports was an area where we said, you know what, put all the rest of the world aside. I want to go watch my kids play. I want Major League play. I want to enjoy the spirit of play. So the spirit of play is not about the spirit of politics, okay? Unless you take politics not so seriously and then you play in politics, which is what some of these people are doing. But the reality is, Major League Baseball made an error. And the error was that they thought we will react quickly, and so will some of these corporate sponsors, so that we get political benefit. You know, I think they call it virtue signaling. We'll get political benefit somehow from being the ones that bang the drum. The problem is they bang the wrong drum for the wrong purpose. And the purpose here is to villainize basically people who are just looking for rule of law. And the saddest part about this is that the average American has to sustain this and look at it and say, you know, you're tiring me again. You're taking something that's non-political, something that I've enjoyed. I mean, they're doing, by the way, this corporate self-censorship has gone, as we talked about last time,
everywhere, Bobby,
into food, it's everywhere. Baseball and football. And we have to say, look, let's just try to be a little smarter about this. Okay. There's common sense, and we can play baseball without having a political discussion. And
it's a shame that we see Major League Baseball acquiesce to these woke gods, and I think it will come back to bite them. American people are too smart in the end, and you know, we care about our traditions, we care about our values. And I want to move to a couple of other quick questions, because Bobby, you have a graduate degree in business, and economics. Geez, that stuff is tough to really fully understand. But we've got another major thing that nobody's really talking about that we ought to be talking about is the national debt. You know, and as a businesswoman, as a mother that runs a household, I understand what it means to take money in and pay money out. And at the end of the day, you've got to make sure that you cover your expenses. And, you know, we've all been in hard places in our lives, but I don't know if you've ever been there, but, you know, in my early 20s, I was in some credit card debt. I had like a 19% or 20% interest rate. I was spending more than I was earning. I was putting my overspend on my credit card, and I was paying interest on that credit card, and that interest was killing me. And so we have to recognize that the country has this huge, huge national debt, and we're not balancing our budget. And I just would like to, you know, because AMAC, one of our initiatives is really to bring about a smart conversation. How do we make sure that our future generations aren't really set back so far, because we can't keep spending this way. Something's going to give at some point. My father, he talked about this for years, and it was very near and dear to his heart. So, you know, with your degree in economics, I mean, what are your thoughts on how this national debt just continues to grow and grow, and we spend and spend?
Yeah. So this is a great point, Rebecca, and it's a point not commonly talked about, because everything that we talk about is sort of in the instant moment. You know, we're talking about baseball and we're talking about the thing that happened in the headlines yesterday. The truth be told, that the hardest things to concentrate on in life are the intergenerational promises and threats, the things we look forward to and the things that we properly should be worried about. And what's happening right now is that it's not just Democrats. There are some Republicans here too, who are not focused on the long term and recognizing that it is utterly irresponsible. Three or four years ago, we never talked. I mean, I worked 5 years on the Hill. We never talked about a bill that started with a T, trillion. That was an unthinkable number. And actually, if you want to go back, let's say 25 years, nobody thought about a bill with a B.
A billion. Yeah.
Okay. You know, and there's the famous old adage, you know, a million here and a million there. Well, reality is that these things add up. They're like a giant weight on the scale. And the weight is on, it's, you know, it's like G-forces. It hurts the chest when you think about it. Okay. Who's that weight on? That weight is on our children, our grandchildren. And what if we can stay solvent through great grandchildren, that's where the weight is. Okay. It's going to even be on us. And here's why. If you start spending, which they've done here for now years, but now they're accelerating, it's a curve that's an exponential curve. It's going up much faster. When you start spending like that, you're absolutely right to draw the analogy to a personal bank account, because your interest rate on the debt itself begins to be the tail that wags the dog. And what is the effect of all that? Let's be very straight about it. When you get a country that is massively in debt, this is how most, go back and research, this is how most civilizations fail, literally.
Well, this is the history right here. This is the history part. We got to learn from it.
And so civilizations fail when they become so in debt, whether it's because of war or overspending domestically, that they've spent themselves into the future to a point where it's no longer credible. There are only three ways to get out of massive debt at the federal level, which incidentally causes, well, here are the three ways. You can start cutting these federal programs, and you tell me, where's the courage to do that? Until we elect in 2022, 2024, as your father always pushed for, fiscal conservatives who were thoughtful and recognized the responsible leadership is limiting government, not expanding it. So cutting is one thing. The second big thing is to, you can on paper, you can balance it by massively increasing taxes. And this is what they're going to do. They're going to cheat.
That is what they'll do.
Okay. But here's the problem. When you pull money out of the private sector, that causes people to no longer be able to hire and to improve wages and to do all those things that keep the real engine of the economy going.
Ultimately spend less as well. People are more likely to attempt to save.
That's right. That's right.
You know,
and the third way, of course, is to what's called inflate your way out. And this is where seniors and all of us should be concerned, because high levels of inflation, which occurred in the late 1970s, probably the worst case recently in our history. But frankly, in places like the Weimar Republic, hyperinflation, basically what happens is if I'm going to pay those dollars back to China, who, for example, has gotten into our debt market, or I'm going to pay it back to anybody holding a bond, or I'm going to pay it back. The federal government has all these obligations. If I'm going to pay them back, one of the cheats is that you can decrease the value of the dollar with inflation. So now the dollars I'm paying back are not worth as much as the ones that I used in the first place.
That's
the problem. The problem is that affects everything. That affects all of us, all of our wages. If we have a 10% inflation rate, or God forbid we get into 20 or more inflation rate, those dollars that we depend upon to pay for basic functions are now not worth as much. And the prices of food and the prices of transportation and all those other prices go up. So there's only three ways. You cut the programs. That's the responsible way to do it, because we're way out over the top. You stop spending crazy federal money that doesn't belong to you. All these people who are spending in Congress are spending your money.
That's right.
They're not spending their money.
Yep.
Right? So bottom line, Rebecca, is you can either cut, you can raise taxes, which slows the economy down, or you can inflate your way out of debt. And unfortunately, the second two are not good choices.
That's right. Well, I think it's good that people can understand that we can look at other nations. We can see how, in fact, nations have crumbled because haven't figured the right way out or the best way out. And it's really damaged economies and, you know, not good for America right now where we stand to see this national debt just inflate and more spending. We're not cutting. We need to cut. And, you know, I want to turn to a couple of feel good stories. You had some great leadership. One of the things that's sad to me is we are lacking really good, strong leadership. You know, when people, we have such a short time on this great earth, and when we're gone, what people remember are the way, you know, the impact that you had on other lives, the way that you made people feel. People remember that, you know? So when I think about people in Washington, and I specifically think of Kamala Harris and Joe Biden and Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer. I don't think that they're doing the right thing. I don't think that they've got the kinds of leadership that we saw in Ronald Reagan or Donald Trump. I don't think that they've got the moral fiber. They don't seem to be value driven, and they do seem to be so consumed with power. Because so many people aren't feeling good about what they're doing, what they're saying. And that's the legacy that they're going to leave behind. You know, you almost think to yourself, don't you care about your values? Don't you care about your legacy? Do you have any values? You worked under a Reagan White House and Bush 41. Can you share any stories about their leadership style?
Sure.
And how different that is from what we're seeing today. And I think there's, you know, a message of hope in this, because we'll have another president. We won't have Joe Biden forever. Let's hope it's not Harris, right? But let's pray that in 2022, we see that a big change and people vote the right people in. And then, of course, things get better from there. Because the way we're headed, we need better leadership. But a good leadership story, I know you've got them.
Yeah. So let me just say two things. First, boy, you're so right, Rebecca. We are in a situation right now where we benefited, the AMAC generation, I'll call it, benefited from the great examples of leadership, in particular of the World War II vets who came along, did an amazing thing, saved the Western world, literally saved it. And then came back and helped rebuild their towns and contribute in a really other regarding way to the communities in which they lived and raised good families and cared about things. So we are the beneficiaries of that. So that leadership baton was passed on to us. Ronald Reagan. So the second thing is stories, if you will. Okay. Ronald Reagan and George Herbert Walker Bush were of that generation. Mm-hmm. Ronald Reagan actually wanted to go overseas, but they didn't let. He was in uniform. They did not let movie stars, very few. Jimmy Stewart flew bombers. There were a couple of others. But the bottom line is it was very hard to get overseas. So they did their, a lot of his work here. George Herbert Walker Bush, meantime, was the youngest naval aviator, World War II, shot down over the Pacific. Extraordinary guy. I will tell you, incidentally, that in researching the book that I wrote in 2018, Eagles and Evergreens, came upon a family that had a member in the family who had been on the San Jacinto carrier with Bush. And one of the things that's never been made public, but is a fact, which I thought was riveting, was that, you know, he was significantly injured in that shoot down. And I think his navigator was killed. And when they picked him up, I can't remember if it was broken collarbone or ribs, but within 30 days, he didn't go to Ramstein. He didn't come home. Within 30 days, he was back in a TBM Avenger flying off that carrier deck for America. Okay. So two simple stories from White Houses. Okay, well, this is a little White House. So I worked with Reagan. And then at one point in 1990 or 91, I had an opportunity to go out. Having worked in his White House as a very young person, had a chance to go out and visit with him. And there was a staffer who said, "Hey, Bobby, you know, he loves to see old staff." And I said, "But he'll never remember me. I was just a junior nobody." He said, "No, it doesn't matter. Just come out and visit. He loves to have visits." So I went out, and one of the stories that I just loved that he told in a sort of a one-on-one for half an hour was, and I told him, I said, "You know, I can't tell you what a tremendous, you know, privilege it is to just sit here one-on-one and talk with you, and also to thank you for everything you did for America." He was very humble, looked down at his feet.
Very nice.
Looked down at his feet. He was very crisp and intellectually, but he looked down at his feet and just, you know, said thank you. And he said, I asked him about a picture on the wall that was himself with Margaret Thatcher, former prime minister. And of course, sure. They brought down the Soviet Union together, and supported also by a Catholic Pope. But he said, "Well, let me tell you a story about Maggie." He didn't refer to her as Prime Minister Thatcher. He referred to her as Maggie. He said, "When I was just president, I was the new kid on the block, and we did these meetings called G7 meetings." And he said, I was the new kid on the block. And so we go to this meeting, and it was, I think, in London. And he said, "I walked into a room and here are all the world leaders. But in particular, here is the Prime Minister of Canada standing over Margaret Thatcher." At that point, Pierre Trudeau, the father of the current Prime Minister, standing over Margaret Thatcher and lecturing her. And she's sitting in a big chair, and he's just going after her and accusing her, saying, "All your conservative policies don't make any sense. And why are you going after the Soviet Union and this and that and the third thing?" And Margaret Thatcher apparently was sitting right in a chair and said nothing. So as Trudeau wandered away, Reagan said, I went over and I caught up with her as she was stepping out. And I said, "Maggie, that he had no right to say those things to you. And you just sat there and you let him say all those things. Why did you let him get away with that?" And this is Reagan talking. And he says, she looked
up. You do
up,
a good Reagan impression, by the well, way. Sounds like him.
He said, "Maggie just looked at me and she said, 'Ron, a woman must know when a man is being simply childish.'" And he laughed so hard. He thought that was the funniest thing. Yeah. So leadership is about self-deprecating good humor, because you have to remember you serve others. They don't serve you. And the other little short story I'll give you is about George Herbert Walker Bush. As a junior staffer, they would circulate on the Office of Policy Development. They would circulate draft speeches before they were given. So we were all given our chance to do little hen scratches, most of which probably were tossed away when they got back to the speechwriter's office. But in any event, I always thought it was extremely valuable. This was in 1992. I thought it was extremely valuable that people understand that George Herbert Walker Bush, although different from Reagan, was a genuine national hero, that this guy had done things that were just truly heroic in World War II. And we have to separate sort of nonsensical kind of heroes that we talk about who are rock stars or rap stars, right, or something, from real heroes who have real put their life, yeah, on the line for us. So I would write in, you know, if he was giving a speech to, let's say, a military academy, I would write in and I would just like to note that, you know, having served in World War II and been shot down, I have a sense of the commitment you make or something like that. I did this time after time, and they were always never in the speech. I'd go listen to the speech and nothing there. So I finally went down to the chief speechwriter's office one night. It was 10 o'clock or so at night. And I said, what gives here? You know, we're in an election. I mean, I'm not an election guy. I'm not a campaign guy. I just know the merits of what this man has done. Why is it that every single situation he was running against Bill Clinton, who incidentally had dodged the draft, mm-hmm. Yeah, I dodged any service. But the bottom line was, why can't we put those in? And he got very sort of cerebral and he leaned back. This was the chief speechwriter. And he said, Bobby, you're not the first one to do that. When I first got here, I would write those things into those speeches. And then the president would call me over to the Oval. And he said, after you've gone over there a number of times, and he takes out a red pen and he draws a line without saying a word through those things, after a certain point in time, you don't put them in anymore. And I said, how does that make sense? And he said, Bobby, this is the situation. George, the president, POTUS, we call him, president of the United States, he thinks that either the American people already know this or it is not his right to tell them. Now that is leadership. That's is humility in a leader. And God knows, I wish that more of the American people then and now could distinguish between those who really served, who've done everything that they could possibly do for us, and those that really just ride the wave, you know, that are just politicians.
That's good. Well, thank you for those stories. And we've got to remember to pray for our POTUS, because they certainly need them. And our nation needs good leadership. So we've got to pray for that. Bobby, thank you so much for joining me today. This was a heck of a lot of fun. I love to hear your perspective on things and look forward to having you back with us again next week. That's it for us today. This is Reb and Rob on Truth and History. This is your AMAC podcast, Better for America. And we look forward to having you back with us again next time.
Thank you for listening to the Better for America podcast. To learn more about AMAC and all it has to offer, visit us at www.amac.us.